Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:25 a.m. on Friday, March 13th, 2026. And we have Representative Allard, Representative Stapp, Representative Moore, Representative Bynum, Co-Chair Schrage, Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Jimmy, Representative Galvin will be online, and I'll be receiving a note here shortly when she is online. Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Hannon, myself, Co-Chair Foster. Let's see, Representative Allard, I thought was here, but she's not here.
No.
So, okay. So, before we start, just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones, and we have some last-minute possible changes to the bill, and so maybe I should just kind of read from my script here before I go off script, and then I'll focus on that. So we have one item on the agenda this morning, that's Senate Bill 64. That's the elections bill by Senate rules. Today we'll pick up where we left off yesterday with questions to the sponsor and Division of Elections, review the updated fiscal notes, and put the bill aside. The expectation was that amendments were going to be due at the end of today, but the sponsors met with the Division of Elections, and they will discuss additional changes this morning, and we'll see a new committee substitute on Monday. Let's see, and then we'll set, at that time, we'll set the amendment deadline. We had planned on hearing House Bill 280 this morning, the highly digitized tax bill, but we'll bring that up next week under bills previously heard. And so to go back to some of the changes, my expectation was to pick up where we left off with regarding questions. However, the changes that are being proposed could change the questions that are being asked. So maybe what I think I'd like to do is maybe touch on, it sounds like maybe the fiscal notes may not change. And so just to dispense with that step, maybe if I could call Mr. Brody Anderson up to walk us through the fiscal note, and then we'll have Senator Wilikowski come up, and maybe as well as Ms. Carol Beecher, and talk a little bit about maybe some of the proposed changes that will come out in the CS next week, and then we'll jump back into questions. So with that, Mr. Anderson, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you. For the record, Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Foster. There are two new fiscal notes that were submitted in the new fiscal year. I will touch on the easiest one first, which is Department of Revenue's Tax and Treasury Permanent Fund Division, OMB component number 981. The control code is GKVTC. This fiscal note is only being reviewed because they did submit a new one as of 1/20/2026. It is still primarily the same exact indeterminate fiscal note from the department, showing that there's that they will be pushing the bill requires that they share information with Division of Elections, and that they'll have to update both their paper and online applications to inform in order to comply with that request. And so at this point, it's indeterminate with no information beyond just that they'll absorb the cost. The second one, which is for the Division of Elections, Office of the Governor, Elections, OMB component number 21, control code RPVFQ, and that one has changed from last year in the following ways. In FY27, the total operating cost for this fiscal note will be $888,100. That is a decrease from their last year's fiscal note of $397,700. The largest change and the only change is in services. Last year, they reflected a service charge of $208,500. And now they're reflecting that it is $198,900 in order to comply. Going into the out years, they had reflected that it was going to services were going to cost around $162,200. That was a decrease from $170,500. They still reflect that there's one full-time position needed for the hiring of the rural liaison at a range 16 for a total cost of that position of $124,200. They also have five temporary employees that will be hired on, and those five temporary will be for the ballot curing process, which will be an estimated cost of $80,000. They do have a capital estimated cost. Last year's estimated cost was $788,000 to implement this bill. It has gone down now to $165,000. The following pages have a more detailed breakdown of each one of those line items will cost per position, per postage, and other factors that factored into that first page, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Anderson, can you repeat the control code?
Yes, for the Division of Elections, RPVFQ.
And can you repeat what the estimated capital cost for FY27 was going to be?
For FY27, capital cost, $765,000.
Okay. Can you repeat what the operating expenditures for FY27 were going to be?
FY27's operating cost $388,100.
Thank you. So that's the second fiscal note. And then the third fiscal note?
The other fiscal note was not changed from last year, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr.
Anderson?
Through the chair, that is the only two new fiscal notes that I have reflected.
Okay, thank you. Would also like to note that we have online with us Representative Galvin. While we're here, maybe let's go ahead and open it up to questions on the fiscal notes, and then we'll round back to the senator and talk about some of the proposed changes that will come out in CS. Do we have any questions on the fiscal notes? Representative Bynum?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, really quick, I'm looking at control code RPVFQ. For the fiscal note, there's the, in the analysis portion, there's the absentee for the primary election and general election. This has to do with the post each paid envelopes. It states that these were the numbers in the 24 election. I'm not sure if these are the actual numbers that we received back or if these were what were sent. I don't know if you would know that.
Through the chair, I would not know that answer, but I do know Director Beecher is here to maybe get a little bit more specific information on regarding that part of the analysis.
Okay. You could certainly bring her up. We'll go ahead and do that maybe.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Co-Chair Foster. I think, you know, it's probably going to be a minimal difference. I just don't know what they were, what the assumption was.
And okay. So, this is our time to ask questions. And so I we'll definitely, if we could have Ms. Carol Beecher come up, put yourself on the record and want to make sure we're doing this right. So thanks.
And then Co-Chair Foster, while we're doing that, I did have a second question that may be somewhat related. In the bill, there's a portion under Section 16, I believe, that talks about paying workers and the compensation would be paid or adjusted or would be determined by the commissioner instead of by regulation. I just wasn't sure if there was anything in the fiscal notes that might reflect a change or if that's just indeterminate at this time as well.
Ms. Beecher.
Thank you. For the record, Carol Beecher, Director of the Division of Elections. That number for the absentee voter envelopes is based on those that we sent out with the assumption that everybody who got one would be responding.
And a quick follow-up.
Representative Bynum.
Do you recall just in general numbers, like what percentage we received back for what we sent out?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, I do not, but we could get that number for you.
Sure. Thank you. And
Mr. Sure. Representative Bynum.
Co-Chair Foster. The reason I'm asking is because my understanding of the way that the prepaid mail works, it's not about the we pay to send them out, but when we go to receive them back, we only pay for what we actually get put in the mail, not what we actually sent out. So that's why I'm asking.
Okay, thank you. Further questions on the fiscal notes? Okay, seeing none, I think, Representative Bynum?
Yes, Co-Chair Foster. There was the second part of that question had to do with Section 16 and paying election workers. Mm-hmm. Right now in the law, it says that we're paying by regulation, and in this bill, it changes that to, I don't want to say it wrong, so let me, Section 16, it just says that the director shall set compensation. I'm sorry, I said commissioner earlier. Director shall set compensation based on the section and not by regulation. And I wasn't sure if there was, if that was just an indeterminate potential cost. I know we've had discussions about how we were paying election workers, whether or not it's sufficient, and that the director would be able to make a determination on what was needed to be able to bring people in to do that work. And I wasn't sure if that was just an indeterminate for the fiscal note, if it was something that we didn't consider, or it would be something that we would know later in the process.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, yes, this it could result in more. I know that a lot of the boroughs and the municipalities pay more, or boroughs pay more for their election workers in the state. So if we ran into a situation where we were finding we were unable to get poll workers as a result of that, particularly in the areas where both are voting at the same time, we can compete for workers. And so it could be a situation where we needed to raise the amount that we pay our
voter. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Ms. Beecher, feel free to stay up, and we'll have Mr. Dunsmore and Senator Wilikowski come up. You can put yourselves on the record. And so what I'd like to do is we left off yesterday with in the queue. I had questions. We had Representative Shragi, Galvin, and Bynum. But what I'd like to do before jumping right into the questions where we left off yesterday is jump into some of the proposed changes that we don't have in writing at this point, but a CS will be forthcoming, and we wanted to at least take this time to get a head start on that. Ms. Beecher, did you have a comment?
Yes, thank you, Chair Foster. I just wanted to clarify for the record regarding the PFD list that the division receives from the Permanent Fund Dividend Division, that I said yesterday that we received the whole list. And by that, I mean the whole list of those who are 18 or older and have noted that they are U.S. citizens. So it would not include non-citizens, and it would not include children.
Okay, thank you. Okay, with that, Senator Wilikowski, Mr. Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Bill Wilikowski, State Senator for East Anchorage, joined by David Dunsmore from my office. Appreciate the opportunity to appear before you again, and I appreciate the meeting yesterday. I thought it was great questions, good discussion, good dialogue. Your staff prompted us to have a meeting with the division. We've had numerous meetings with them over the last year and a half. This is a bill that's been in the work literally for a decade, and I feel like we're coming down the home stretch. A little bit of fine-tuning is needed, and I appreciate the committees helping us get there, because I think you raised some good points. And in the meeting that we had last night with Division of Elections, we discussed the concerns that came out, and would like to suggest for the committee's consideration ways of addressing them. And I can go through the items right now, Mr. Chairman, if you'd like. We don't think there's substantive changes to the bill, but there. I can go through them, Mr. Chairman, if you would like, and I'll start with page 3, line 14. This was a concern raised by Rep. Allard that there should be an or. I'm sorry, line 13. Page 3, line 13, there should be an or there.
And is that the red line of the R, or is that the cleaned up? Or actually, we don't.
This is the not the red line version. This is the... the work draft.
Okay. Would also like to recognize that we do have with us Representative Allard. Thank you. And Representative Stamp.
Yeah. Can I just ask just a procedural question, Chair? So I appreciate the senator going over changes, but I mean, wouldn't that be more appropriate just to go over the changes when the committee substitute is before the committee? That way we can have it on the record for the public.
That was the question that was before us this morning, and I thought, and I found out that we were going to have some changes, just shortly before the meeting started. And so I thought, well, we can at least start to discuss them. We don't have the, as you mentioned, the final draft in front of us. But since everybody was here and otherwise we would have just canceled the meeting. And I thought, well, let's at least have the meeting. We can at least start the discussion. It might be not the perfect, way forward, but at least, you know, we can get these on the record. People can start thinking about them. If there's anything that folks think that they're substantive, it would at least give us more time to, discuss those. Representative Stapp, were you done?
Yeah, no, this is it. Thanks.
Okay. Good. No, it's a good point because that was the question that came up this morning. So I just made a quick decision on that. Representative Allard.
Thank you. I appreciate the changes. I just guess my question is, we had an amendment deadline for 5 today. How is that going to impact our amendments when they, switch them up? Are we going to extend that deadline to kind of alleviate?
Be extended. Yes, that'll be extended.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry.
No, that's the exact questions that we need to be answering this morning. So,
Mr. Chairman, why don't
Representative Hennen?
Thank you. Since Representative Allard, when you told us that give her the full instructions or changes that you told us about as we started the discussion of this bill.
I apologize for
that. We're expecting a committee substitute on Monday.
Correct.
Because.
Thank you.
She jumped to the amendment deadline, but you gave us that change of an amendment deadline after giving us some precursor information.
Right. And I'm just going to back up all the way here. And so yesterday we left off with, we still had questions for the Division of Elections. So we wanted to have this meeting this morning, even though it wasn't scheduled, just to finish asking questions. And then what happened this morning is Senator Wilikowski and Division met to kind of try to address some of the questions that came up from this committee yesterday. And in doing so, they came up with some maybe suggested minor, as far as I understand, they're not substantive changes. And so what we wanted to do is at least maybe start talking about that today. Normally what we would do is what Representative Stapp suggested, which is have a clean version of the bill and then talk about it. But I found out about 10 minutes before the meeting started, and I said, well, we can either cancel the meeting or we can at least continue on with the meeting, start talking about it. People can have the weekend to think about it. And so because of that, we'll also be pushing the amendment deadline back. That's kind of where we're at right now. And Senator Wilikowski, did you want to walk through some of these possible changes? I think we've got somebody online. Was somebody wanting to get my attention?
Chair Foster, I wasn't sure if you had called on me yet. This is Representative Galvin.
Oh, thank you, Representative Galvin. I don't see you on the list, but I know I've got a note that said you're online, and I mentioned that you're online, and so thanks for being here. I know that you've got, a number of legislators have meetings back home this weekend with their communities. And so, I know you're preparing for that. Representative Bynum, do you have a question?
Just a quick comment, and a question. Thank you, co-chair. I really appreciate, the senator and his staff being here to kind of talk about some of the new developments. I think it'll help inform our process as we move forward. So I appreciate you doing that and bringing that forward. I just was wondering if the Division of Elections, Ms. Beecher, is going to be available next week, if there's any additional things that come up, or if today is the basically the opportunity we have with her. I wasn't sure.
My hope is that, Ms. Beecher, you're available next week. I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be the case, but maybe I'll let you answer that, Ms. Beecher.
Thank you, Chair Foster. I will be available next week. I'll be online for the morning meeting and then in person for the afternoon.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. I think, we're all good. So with that, Senator Wilikowski.
Okay. Thank you. As mentioned, Mr. Chairman, Bill Wilikowski for the record, this was, a drafting error that was caught by Representative Allard on page 3, line 13. There needs to be an or there. And And next change was suggested by Representative Tomaszewski, or a concern raised, page 3, lines 26 through 28, maintained a physical address located outside the state for the full duration of the 28 months immediately preceding the examination of the register. We would propose that that section be taken out. And the concern is that if you have a vacation home outside, if you have a second home outside, then you would continually be in this cycle where you would keep getting letters. And that's not our intent. And so we think we would suggest that that be taken out.
Got a question, Representative Tomaszewski. Can you just clarify what you said about which section? And
that was page 3, lines 26 through 28. That's section 4 of the bill.
Okay. Senator, and so that would be the maintain a physical address located outside the state for the full duration of the 28 month immediately preceding the examination of the register. Is that correct, Senator?
That's correct, yes. Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Okay, please proceed on the next item.
Okay, so then next we move to page 5, line 17. We would propose replacing systematic alien verification for entitlements program with a system or systems for verifying citizenship. This is to address concerns that were raised by a number of the members. And then we'd also suggest to address the concerns about confidentiality of Alaskans' information, that add language on page 5, line 20, saying that, however, nothing in this subsection may be construed to authorize the division to transmit confidential information to a person outside the division or to a government agency unless the information is encrypted and only if the entity receiving the information will use the information for the purpose of assisting the division in carrying out the requirements of this subsection and will not retain the information or transmit it to another entity.
Okay. Next item.
Next is on page 6, lines 15 through 28. There.
Question. Question, Representative Moore.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Just for a quick clarification, on page 5, are you deleting line 17? Sorry, I missed the first part of your
question. No, we're deleting on line 17, systematic alien verification for entitlements program.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Is that line 17 or line 18?
Line 17, page 5.
Representative Allard?
I apologize. I didn't remember my devices. Could her question, can he repeat that? And her question, can she repeat that?
Sure. Representative Moore?
Yes. Through the co-chair, my question was on page 5, line 17. I was asking if they were deleting the system alien verification for entitlement program. And then...
And the answer, and let me clarify what I said, because yes, we are deleting that, but we're replacing it with a system or systems for verifying citizenship.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Senator Wilikowski.
Okay. Next up, page 6, lines 15 through 28. We are, proposing to add in section 9 that for data breaches that happen outside of the time periods described in paragraphs 1 and 2, that they will be disclosed within 30 days. This was a concern raised by the Division of Elections. Okay. Page 6, lines 31 through page 7, line 1. This was a concern raised by the Division of Elections, particularly on line 6, on line 31, page 6, where it says, shall collaborate with tribes and municipalities to facilitate access to early and absentee voting in rural areas. And the division pointed out there are most villages do not have early voting. So we would propose changing that to absentee voting and early voting where it is available.
Okay, next item.
Page 7, lines 6 and 7. This was a concern raised by the Division of Elections. We would propose replacing by registering to vote under with applying for a permanent fund dividend unless it's the voter's initial registration.
Mr. Chairman.
Got a question from Representative Hannon and then Josephson. Representative Hannon? Hannon?
Either the sponsor needs to restate which page it's at because our page 7, 6, and 7 have to do with APOC contribution disclosures. So,
Mr. Dunsmore?
It doesn't seem to match.
My apologies, Mr. Chair. These were written at like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Good morning. For the record, David Dunsmore, staff to Senator Wilkowski. And yeah, I apologize. That was a typo on my part. This is found on section 7 and page 5. So that's section 7, not page 7.
So I will repeat that then, Mr. Chairman, if I could. It's proposing on page 5, line 6, where it says an individual does not contact the division by registering to vote. In speaking with the Division of Elections, we believe a better way of stating this would be changing registering to vote to by applying for a permanent fund dividend unless it is a voter's initial registration.
Okay, next item.
Okay, next we'll move to page 11, lines 14 through 18. And this was a concern raised by the Division of Elections and also by Representative Bynum. We would propose adding language that notwithstanding a provision that would reject a ballot properly cured under AS 1520-222 shall be counted. Page 15, lines 28 through 31. These were concerns raised by the Division of Elections. We would propose deleting lines 28 through 31. That's sections 3 and 4 of section 28. I'm sorry, paragraphs 3 and 4 of section 28. Page 16, line 11. That's, again, a suggestion by the Division of Elections. We would propose that section 30 be deleted, line 11 be deleted entirely.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So that's page 16, line 11?
Correct.
Section 30?
Yes.
And so my understanding, this is a repealing that section, so we would not be repealing that section.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. Through the chair.
And so I guess Co-Chair Foster, I'll just have to go, we'll go grab that section and go see exactly what it actually, what were we repealing, I guess, is the question.
Mr. Dunsmore?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, this is the section that Director Beecher expressed concerns that the effect of it would be to not allow, that repealing that section, the effect of repealing would be to not allow the division to update mailing addresses based on permanent fund dividends. So by removing that repealer, it would allow the division to continue its current practice of doing so.
Thank you.
Okay. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, to address the concerns that the division raised about having enough time, we would propose on page 17, line 6, to update the effective date for the ballot curing and ballot tracking provisions that they take effect after the primary, but in time for the general election. We've checked with legislative legal, and we believe we can craft language to that effect.
Okay, Representative Josephson.
On to Senator Willekoski on this last item of the curing taking effect for November of this year, but not August of this year. Is that the, does that include the full electronic components of it so that it would be fully implemented as sought by the sponsor?
Senator Willekoski?
Yes, through the chair. That would be our intent, and that would be our belief as to what would happen. And just for the committee's understanding of this, we met with the lieutenant governor last year, and we were assured that as long as this bill was passed, and we met again in December of this year, of last year, and we were assured that as long as this bill passed in March of this year, that they would be able to implement this bill as it is written. That includes the ballot tracking and the ballot curing. And so that's why we've been pushing to have this bill passed in March, and that's why we appreciate your taking this up and with you exercising your due diligence. So we believe that they should, but in the event that they can't, they've got five people, and we know that there's only about 1,000 ballots that are rejected, and those five people can each handle 200 of those rejected ballots, we believe, with absolutely no problem. This is giving them an additional 2 months to address the concerns that they don't have enough time.
Thank you.
Further questions, Representative Hannon?
Thank you. My question, Chair Foster, is for Ms. Beecher and the page 16, line 11, repeal of the PFD address. And I guess I am thinking back to an election. I'm wanting to know how many address corrections does the department typically see from merging the PFD addresses with voter registration?
Ms. Beecher?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I do not know that number, but I can find that out for you.
Okay. I guess I'll say it here so that it's there. I am thinking back to a specific election where in a recount that came down to a handful of votes in Fairbanks, the issue became that the PFD address that the person used was different than their voter registration. So then they were re-registered into a different district. They voted a question ballot. And then it turns out they should not have voted in that district. Now it counted, and because that's where the voter re-registration had been. I happen to be one where my physical address and mailing address are different from each other, but they are the same between my voter registration and the PFD. But I can think of a number of scenarios where people legitimately, and I think in this case it was he used a business address for his PFD. And I don't know that it – us trying to be efficient and saying this – three different addresses, certainly one of them, but there are very legitimate reasons why someone has a certain address for their voting. That is where they live, but their banking is done in town in Fairbanks as opposed to out in the sticks by Fox. So I'm just curious how often we're doing this and whether we're actually doing some redistricting by merging our voter and PFD of putting people into different voting districts.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, just in regards to the permanent fund data, when an individual's residence address changes, that is when the division sends out a notice to them to be able to opt out of changing that. For the mailing addresses, we don't send out a notice. That is just updated, just to be clear on which addresses.
Representative Hannon?
My recollection from our PFD applications, Mr. Chairman, is it asks where we are residents, but we have banking addresses. And again, my recollection is this was a complicated one. If somebody had been discharged from prison, they had a residence address one place, and they used a banking address separate from where they lived because it was a more stable location. Maybe it's the one and only time it's ever happened since we've used PFD voter registration to merge files, but I'd like to know how often we're doing it.
Mr. Dunsmore, and then we'll go to after, we'll put you in the queue. I think we've got Representative Bynum, then Allard. Representative, Mr. Dunsmore?
Through the chair, Representative Hammond, I'm familiar with I'm very familiar with that ballot that was at issue in that recount. That is this provision that would be repealed in the R version, but after discussion with Division of Elections, we're proposing to not repeal. Only deals with updating mailing addresses, not residence addresses. So regardless of whether that's repealed or not, it doesn't affect how voters' residence addresses are handled. The permanent fund division has updated the application form to make the language clearer that you are, as I believe part of the thing was an inconsistency in terminology where the PFD form asks for a physical address, not a residence address. And they've updated the form so that there's now, I just actually applied for mine yesterday. So I can personally verify that they have that the current form provides a screen where there's a pop-up where it explicitly tells you that if you don't opt out, you're updating your voting address, and it gives you the opportunity to provide a separate residence address from your voting address. Anecdotally, I have heard, haven't heard in the last couple of years, issues from people about having their addresses inadvertently changed. So I believe, just my personal opinion, I think the permanent fund division's updating the form has gone a long ways to solve that problem.
Representative Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that information, Ms. Beecher, do not take my homework assignment. I know that Mr. Dunsmore is very familiar with the specific case I was talking of. I believe he was representing in that challenged ballot and the recounts.
Thank you.
So in the line, I've got Representative Bynum. I think. Oh, okay. I'm going to take a brief at ease, then we'll go to questions from Representative Bynum and Allard. So brief at ease. Okay, House Finance back on record at 10:03 a.m. And let's see, I think our scheduled time this morning is from 9 to 10. We'll go as long as we can. And if we start losing a couple of folks, then we'll probably call it good for the day. Again, my intent was to roll out conceptually these proposed changes today, and then we will have those in written form. But at least when we do get that next week, we'll have a little bit of a head start in knowing what those are. So with that, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, I do have a whole plethora of questions here, but I think for most of my questions, I'll probably wait on them. But I did want to ask a follow-up from Representative Hannon, specifically talking about the PFD and addresses. I was hoping Ms. Beecher might be able to clarify a little bit, and you did a little bit already. Talk a little bit about the difference between a physical address, a mailing address, how those correspond with the voter roll portion. And then also with the PFD division, when you're going through the process functionally, I know that you can register to vote there, like when you fill out your PFD application. The question is it opt-in or is it automatic? And then secondly, can you update your voter registration in the same manner?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum. So regarding the types of addresses, the residential address is required for your voter registration. And an individual can change that, but that determines, of course, where you're allowed to vote. So that is an essential component. A mailing address is more for mailing informational types of things, but it doesn't determine your house district that you are eligible to vote in. Mm-hmm. That answers your correct question. Yes. Could you restate your second half?
Sure. Thank you. The second half of the question had to do with the voter updating your voter registration and or registering to vote. My understanding is that this is an opt-in, but I wanted to clarify, is this opt-in? And do you have the same option to opt-in to update?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Bynum, excuse me, the way that the permanent fund process works, it's an automatic voter registration, PFD-AVR. Okay. So when an individual fills out their permanent fund dividend for the first time and we get that information, then we send them a notice. And they have the option to opt out. If we do not hear back from them, then they are registered to vote.
And then,
sure. Representative Bynum.
And then, so for that, for the updating of your information, basically to update my voter registration, that's done automatically based on the resident address.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, if their resident address changes through the PFD AVR process, they are also sent a notice to confirm that they want us to update that residence address. And if we don't hear back from them again, then it is updated.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Allard.
Thank you. I just have one quick question because I have a meeting coming up I've got to go to. Through the chair, Mrs. Beecher, I respect that Senator Wilikowski really does want this implemented this year, and I understand the importance of that. I'm a little bit worried, though, that we're not going to be able to guarantee that it goes smoothly. Can you tell me your opinion on that, please?
Ms. Beecher.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, we have expressed concerns about implementing anything that has to do with the system this year because of the press of election business that we have to undertake. So we have an election third week of August, we have an election the first week of October, and we have an election the first week of November. And we have limited staff. We only have about three people in each of our regional offices, permanent staff, and we only have two IT staff. So implementing something that is a system that we could say that this has been thoroughly tested and that we can guarantee you it's going to work well, I would not be able to say that I could guarantee that.
Just one quick follow-up.
Representative Allard.
Did you say you had an election for April?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, no. We have an election in August
okay.
for the primary. We have an election in October for the REAA elections and the first week of November for the general election.
May I follow up? Allard? Doesn't the municipality election have – isn't there some intertwining, though, with the municipality of Anchorage with the state?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, no.
Okay.
You do not work with no the tie. Municipality for their
okay.
municipal
Thank
elections.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. I think what I'd like to do, we'll come back to Representative Bynum here in a second, but after we go to that question, we'll go ahead and adjourn for the day. I want to make sure that folks are able to be here, and I know that folks have other commitments. So we'll be moving on after we come to this question here. And Representative Nelly, do you have a clarifying or Representative Nelly? Oh, is it a question? Oh, let me put you in the queue here. So we're going to wrap up for sure then after Representative Nelly asks a question. Representative Bynum?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. It's just a clarifying question through the chair to Ms. Beecher. When I look at the bill that's in front of us, there's lots of different elements in this. Is the division comfortable telling us which sections of the bill that they believe could be implemented immediately? And then which sections they feel like they would need more time on. I mean, for clarity, I mean, we're having this conversation. Now, obviously, we can pass a bill and we can give direction that you shall do. And then there's a question of whether you really can. And if you don't, what are the consequences? Those are questions that we probably have to have answered at some point. But it was just the question specifically is, not right now, but can you provide to us elements of the bill you think that could be no problem for the division, concerns for the division, and then things that you do believe that you absolutely cannot implement?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, yes, we could provide that to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Nelly?
We are not. Co-Chair Foster, you had brought up earlier or boroughs and the pay scale. I just wanted to ask, are there unorganized boroughs and boroughs on the same pay scale?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, I don't know the pay scale in every borough, but I have heard that some of them are paying more than the Division of Elections pays for poll workers.
For So the boroughs get paid more than unorganized boroughs?
Ms. Beecher?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, I don't know if the unorganized are paid more than organized boroughs, but I do know that boroughs in general, I've heard, pay more than the Division of Elections.
Thank you.
Sorry, I meant to say Representative Jimmy. I said Representative Nelly.
How dare you?
Yes. Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. You went through some changes really quickly. Page 11, I missed the change that you, Senator Wilikowski, talked about, a change on page 11. Can you just go through that one real quick?
Mr. Densmore?
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, we're proposing to address the concerns and in discussing with legal, the concerns raised by Director Beecher and Representative Bynum in questioning about how the cure process would work. We're just proposing adding language in Section 22 to explicitly reference that, notwithstanding the provisions of law that would have a ballot rejected, if it's properly cured, it will be counted.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Maybe I want to, Senator Wilikowski, do you have any closing comments? Okay, so what my intent was, again, is even though we didn't have a nice, clean document with the proposed changes, I thought we could make some good use of our time today and just at least roll the concepts out. People have a head start when we do come back to it, and we do have the formalized committee substitute with this proposed language next week. So we'll do that. The amendment deadline is again going to be pushed back. I don't believe we have a time for that at this point, but we'll announce that next week. So with that, we're going to set this bill aside. Our next scheduled meeting is today at 1:30 p.m. And at that meeting, we'll be taking public testimony on the operating budget from the following regions around the state, and that's the Anchorage, Mat-Su areas, and then any other areas, any other folks that were not able to testify throughout the week because of some of the delays that we've had and the changes in the scheduling of our finance meeting. So also, if folks want to submit written testimony, that option is available, and you can send that to us at house.finance@akleg.gov. One more time, if you want to send written testimony to us, you can email us at house.finance@akleg.gov. So if there's nothing else to come before the committee, we will be adjourned at 10:13 a.m. Thank you.